Welcome, viewers and listeners, to another edition of CHP Talks. I'm here today with a guest from Vancouver Island, Mr. Murray Coulter. Murray, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome, Rod. It's nice to be on your podcast, and you're doing some great work in the province, and I just want to join you tonight and reach out to your guests.
Thanks very much. And so for those who may not know Murray Coulter, in the Courtenay area, he was born in Victoria in 1949. So he's an island boy, Vancouver Island, and a BC resident. He's got five children, 17 grandchildren, he and his wife, Rita. And he has made his living most of his life as a logger on the island. But now today he serves as a pastor and teacher. He and his wife in 2007 opened a recovery home for women in Courtenay. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. But our purpose of this particular call is going to be focused on BC's drug program, drug policies in the province of British Columbia. And Murray knows a bit about that, and he's going to share some thoughts about those problems that come out of an addicted lifestyle. So, Murray, I'm not quite sure where to start, but maybe by telling the people in rough form, what are the laws today in British Columbia regarding dangerous addictive substances, what we refer to as street drugs?
I believe they have brought in a street decriminalization policy. I would assume that some kind of legislation was passed. In my estimation, it is a very serious and dangerous policy because it incorporates the possession of 2.5 grams of opioids and other dangerous street drugs. Just to back up a little bit, the addict can legally, I wouldn't say legally, but they are allowed to possess up to 2.5 grams of an illicit drug substance for their personal use.
Is that 2.5 grams of either marijuana or opium or cocaine or fentanyl?
Yeah, anything. And the opioids would include morphine, heroin, fentanyl, that kind of thing. Now, the most dangerous part of this is the legalizing the possession of fentanyl, because as we know, 87% of the drug overdoses in British Columbia involve fentanyl. And so that is a very high percentage. So far this year, in the first 7 months, well, from January to July, we've had 1,455 overdose deaths. Now, that is a coroner's report, 1,455 deaths. So that would put us in the possibility of exceeding by 10% the amount of drug overdose deaths that occurred in 2022.
So that's just in British Columbia, 1,455 overdose deaths since January?
Since January of this year. Now, February 1st is when they decriminalized. And their rationale for decriminalizing was to take away the stigma of the drug and allow more people to pursue treatment and allow the drug addict to feel more accepted and not stigmatized. But in saying that, I've got to refer to a bit of my notes here, Rod, but yep. It's important at this point to say what. Now, when this was implemented, our chief medical officer, Bonnie Henry, had this to say. Abstinence is an important treatment model for people who have addictions to alcohol. But it does not, this is her opinion, you know, but it does not work for opioid addiction because it is a chronic relapsing brain disease. And we know that abstinence, especially in the same ways that we did it with alcohol, just doesn't work for people who have a dependency on opioids. Henry said, if anybody's had fentanyl, it's a great drug. And I certainly had it when I had colonoscopy not that long ago. And you can see why people feel good on this drug. And physical dependence on opioids can happen very quickly. And that's one of the things that we're working on, quote, Henry said. Now, she is saying something that is totally contrary to, like, say, most recovery programs prior to decriminalization, because most are like our particular, we started a program in Courtney here called Stepping Stones Recovery House for Women. And we started that in 2007. It was a small house to begin with. And then we purchased a bigger house and we had 6 beds. And the program, although we've stepped back from the program in 2011, the program is still continuing to this day. Now, in saying that, our primary vision was to see women, this works for men and women, doesn't matter who you are, because it worked for me. I was a heroin addict myself. I was addicted to heroin and I used needles and I got Hep C from it. And I had to get a liver transplant in 2001. So I'm 22 years post liver transplant. And at the time I got my liver transplant, I thought, you know, I told the transplant team that was working with me, I said, if I could get 3 years more life, I'd be one of the happiest men. It would be such an answer to prayer. I have been living a healthy life, drug free. And since I got my liver transplant for 22 years now, and wow. It's phenomenal. I'm actually one of the fellows that they keep a close eye on. And when I see my Dr. Eric Yoshida, who's a wonderful physician and internologist, when he sees me, he smiles and says, Murray, you're doing amazing. Keep up the good work. It must have something to do with your faith, he's told me on a few occasions. And yeah, it's a wonderful team and he's a great man. So in saying that, I just want to say that Bonnie Henry, jumping to the assumption that people who are addicted to opioids cannot recover is totally, totally wrong. And for her to make a statement that fentanyl is certainly a great drug to feel good on, how does that go out into our province and how does that affect addicts who hear or would be addicts that hear such a statement as, I can see why this drug is good and why people would be, would quickly use it. And I mean, it just seems so contrary to what a chief medical officer should have to say.
Yeah. Well, there's so many angles to this, Murray, as far as addiction goes. I want to ask you a little bit about without using the whole program, I want to ask you about your journey out of addiction and was faith a part of that? But also, it seems like unless there's going to be an abstinence, I mean, as long as people are continuing to use a drug, the addiction is going to continue and some of the consequences of addiction are going to continue. Some of the hopelessness and the, poverty and the closed doors, the narrowed opportunities. So what was your journey out of drugs and into the productive life that you're living now?
Yeah, just quickly, Rod, I had a grandmother that prayed for me, a spirit-filled, wonderful woman who cared for me. And I was baptized in a Calvary Tabernacle in Victoria at 13 years old. And I, you know, went through some life that wanted to serve God, but I just wasn't able to carry it through in so many areas of my life. My mom and dad divorced, and I can't win my whole testimony, but I got married at a very young age because I was lonely. I got married at 16. I had eloped and went down to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, got married and lived with this one woman, and then I divorced, left her, and I'm with my wife now of 50 years. We've been 51 years since 1971. We've been together. I met her in Victoria, or in Vancouver, sorry, and she was 17, and I was 22, and she had hitchhiked all the way from Detroit, and we met Capilano Beach, I guess it was. Anyways, long story short, I got into drugs, I got addicted, I got arrested, and I got charged with trafficking, conspiracy to traffic in heroin. And it's a very serious offense. I probably would have gone to prison for 10 years at the time. Now they would just have you come in and you'd be out on bail the next day and out on the street and continue doing drugs and selling drugs. That's how our justice system has deteriorated.
But anyway, your life was touched by Jesus in some miraculous way and set you free from that addiction.
Yeah, amen. I'll tell you quickly what happened. I was in court. I had to face these charges. My grandmother was there. She was praying in tongues. I was in call. I was supposed to go on the witness stand, and the prosecutor from Port Alberni. I had a very good lawyer from Victoria. I won't say his name, but anyways, the prosecutor from Port Alberni was tongue-tied. He every time he opened his mouth, he couldn't present his case. And the judge said to the prosecutor, if you can't convince me of what this man is being charged with, how am I going to pass sentence on him? Adjourned. Next time I came in, same thing. The prosecutor could not put a case together to make it sound sensible at all. And so my lawyer, the prosecutor, and my grandmother's praying, of course, all the time, honestly. And they went into his chambers and came out. My lawyer had a big smile on his face. He said, Murray, I want to talk to you, but they've given you a stay of proceedings. And he said, if you don't do anything illegal for 7 years, it's completely dropped. You'll never have a criminal record. And that's how God works. God forgives us, sets us free, and his grace is sufficient to cover every one of our needs. And I believe that's what happened to me. And from that time forward, I wasn't completely clean. I ended up getting Hep C, and the fellow that I used drugs with and got Hep C, he passed away from Hep C, but God's also gave me grace, and I got a liver transplant 22 years ago. And I thought if I could live 3 years, I'd be one of the most happy individuals ever, and God would have really blessed me. But 22 years, healthy life, 17 grandkids, life couldn't be, I'm living the abundant life, and God has granted that to me. I also had open heart surgery in 2019 and have a mechanical heart valve. I was praying for a valve to be miraculously given to me from heaven, but I got one from Texas and it's working great.
All right. Well, the abundant life. Jesus said, I came to give you life and more abundantly. So many of these addicts are living a very narrow and unhappy, unsatisfying life. And your testimony is that God is able to open doors for them and to bring them out of bondage and into the abundant life. So what was your experience with the women who went through the step or that are going through Stepping Stones recovery in Courtney? What kind of progress are made by some of those women?
Yeah, that some of them have done fantastic, and we wanted to have a Christian-based program, and the leaders here in town in Courtney, they kind of poo-hooed it, and they thought it would be better if it wasn't Christian-based, but we persevered, and we tried to get funding too, and it had to go through gaming and different things, and so the first time we got rejected because it was Christian, and I wrote a letter to the director down there and told him why I felt it was so important. I felt that when you go out on the street and talk to people, at least some of those addicts have had a praying grandmother or some Sunday school experience or something. So why not give them something faith building and something to hold on to and to have some hope, right? And I think without hope, it's impossible for people to really recover. And so a faith-based recovery program, which is what the 12-step program was, right? It was faith-based, and to first admit that you're powerless and that you need God, and to stop denying and stop blaming. And abstinence was so important. Part of our program was that, you must, it was imperative that you do not use drugs while you're in the program or while you're going to the program, and that you have a determination in your heart to change. And not every woman could live up to those standards, but many did, and many still do. And, if we would give the people on the street some hope, instead of saying here, like Bonnie Henry said, that it just doesn't work. There's no way for these recovering. Okay, so we know abstinence, especially this is what Bonnie Henry said, and that dependency on opioids, if anyone had, so she says, I know that abstinence, especially in the same way as we did with alcohol, just does not work for people who have a dependency on opioids, Bonnie Henry said. Well, that is not true, because abstinence is one of the primary reasons why someone would overcome. And I believe that the BC government is headed in the exact wrong direction. I called a lady who is in the office next door to the director of mental health and addictions. And I said to her, I said, this fentanyl thing is crazy, because 87% of all the deaths in BC are being caused by fentanyl overdose. And all you need to overdose from fentanyl is, how big 5 grains of salt are? If you tip 5 grains of salt,
okay,
that's enough fentanyl to kill you.
Come on.
So how much, is that? Well, they have said in their, I believe, stupidity, and I don't mind saying the word stupidity, and ignorance, I believe. Let me back up a little bit. They have taken this decriminalization model from Portugal, because decriminalization in Portugal is apparently working according to their data. The problem with using Portugal as a model for British Columbia is that Portugal does not have fentanyl showing up on the streets. And the police and fentanyl have made it clear that fentanyl is not a problem on the street, like it is here in BC. In BC, fentanyl is the drug of choice of almost 87 to 90% of the drug addicts in any part of BC, especially in the east end of Vancouver, but also in Vancouver Island, Northern Health District, everywhere. And our Indigenous women are dying of drug overdoses at 5.6 times the rate of other residents of British Columbia. And you know, so far in the last 14 years, in the last 7 years, there's been over 14,700 deaths as a result of drug overdoses. And the right now in 2023, the main number of people that are dying of drug overdoses are between the age of 10 and 59. And they are dying at a rate of 6.9 people per day. 6.9 people are dying of drug overdoses. And men, 77% of men are dying of drug overdoses. There is a proportion of male or female, 77% of them are men. And 77, and those men are between the ages of 30 and 59. And so it's killing a segment of our population that is the most productive and the best people that our province has to offer. And they're dying at a rate that exceeds homicide. If you put all these things together, homicide, natural diseases, accidents, and if you combine all those things, drug overdoses is higher than, it's the highest rate of anything that's killing people in the province of British Columbia right now.
Yeah. There's two phrases that are being used in British Columbia and in other parts of Canada, but one is safe injection sites, and that's been around for what, the concept. I don't think they've been safe ever, but the concept has been around for a while. And now they're talking about safe supply.
Yeah.
Because, on top of the natural, potentially fatal qualities of these drugs, there is also the possibility of them being tampered with and tainted with other substances that are also dangerous. But, you know, it's sort of safe supply. Both those terms, they don't really mean safe. It doesn't mean that the people of British Columbia are safe just because they're injecting in a publicly supervised facility, or they're injecting drugs that they receive from a public, from the government, actually.
Right.
You told me the other day a statistic, and I think we need to mention this very clearly, that 2.5 grams of an illicit substance, I guess what used to be illegal and now under BC law is decriminalized, an individual can possess 2.5 grams of any of these drugs, including fentanyl.
Right.
And you said that the potential of the harm that could be caused by 2.5 grams, you want to bring that out? You said how many people that could kill.
That's a very important thing. Thank you for bringing that up, Rod. My wife, Rita's sister, Elizabeth, is in Georgia now, but she practiced in Florida as an anesthesiologist. And so she would put people, in a team, put people to sleep. How they did it during her practice was to use fentanyl. And they would start out with, we're talking about micrograms, not grams and not milligrams, micrograms. So we're talking about using a drug called fentanyl to sedate people and depress their respiratory so they go into a deep sleep so they can operate on these people. And they start them out with 50 micrograms. And if you're an old person and a bit frail, 50 to 200 micrograms is enough to put you under and sedate you. So that's the numbers that they work with. Now, we're looking at milligrams and grams. So let's say morphine. Okay, so fentanyl is 100 times more potent, so more deadly than morphine, 100 times. So let's say that people are allowed to possess 2.5 grams of fentanyl. 2.5 grams is 2.5 million micrograms. So let's look at the street dose of a tablet, because a lot of the fentanyl is sold on the street in tablet form. There is 2 milligrams of fentanyl in a hit on the street. So that 2 milligrams equals 2,000 micrograms, okay? So just thinking that 200 micrograms is enough to sedate somebody and put them out, and that's under medical supervision. When you allow somebody to have 2.5 million micrograms in their possession, fentanyl to kill 1,200, you're allowing someone to carry on their person enough fentanyl to kill 1,250 people. And these statistics, this data I'm giving you is the absolute gospel, because I've searched this out and looked at the numbers and compared the numbers with other people. And so it is a tremendous amount of fentanyl. Let's say that they allowed everybody on the street to carry opiates and to carry marijuana, carry hashish, carry cocaine, carry methamphetamines or whatever, carry morphine or heroin. Okay, that's bad enough, 2.5 grams. But when you add into the equation fentanyl that's responsible for killing 87% of the people that are dying of drug overdoses, I mean, if they don't take that fentanyl out of the equation, it's suicide, it's murder, it's people are dying, and it's a terrible death. And if I just picked this up, I would said I was going to be at a meeting. I don't know if you can see that, but yeah, you can. Okay, yeah. That's the naloxone, right? So in here is a little syringe and three little bottles of naloxone that you can break open, draw it up in a syringe, put it in a person's arm, buttocks, or thigh, and it will revive them. And when you talk about safe injection sites, if they didn't have this there, every one of those people that goes in to get a safe injection would die, because the fentanyl that they inject in a safe injection site is killing them, but this brings them back. And it reverses the effects of opioids. Now, there is xylazine and benzodiazepine, which is ending up in the drugs on the street. And xylazine and benzodiazepine does not respond to this. So what's happening right now on the street, more people are dying because the drugs are getting laced with these other two harmful drugs that are very, very strong animal tranquilizers that depress the respiratory system so bad that this does no longer work. So people are dying. And when they tell you so far this year, we've had 1,455 drug overdose deaths, they're not counting anybody that's been taken to the hospital and put under special care and died. So actually the drug overdose deaths are only the ones that are occurring on the street. And when they take somebody away in an ambulance, paramedics take them to the hospital and treat them there, it goes under a different accidental death category. And we're not even getting those statistics. So the amount of people that are actually dying from drug overdoses far exceeds what the government is letting us know.
Wow, that's really shocking. Of course, we're kind of used in the last couple of years, we've gotten used to believing or knowing that the government is not telling us the truth on many issues. And so this is another deception. Well, for instance, for years now, we can't find out how many babies are killed by abortion in British Columbia because the clinics don't have to report, right? So, you know, we can only guess about that. We're not getting the numbers. We have to guess the numbers. So, but this is a case where they're talking about these drugs as if they're highly concerned. The government, you know, talks about it as if it's a big problem, and it is. But they're not even giving us the actual statistics.
Right.
That's unbelievable.
So making it legal to possess that quantity of fentanyl is just an open door for drug trafficking, because actually there was a woman who went through Stepping Stones that recovered, and she did so well that the Vancouver police paid for her to go to school and become a registered nurse. And so she did, and she completed her course, and now she's doing it today. And that was a real success story. But she was standing on the corner of Hastings and Maine as a drug runner. So people would come up to her and they would ask her for certain drugs. She would run and get it and bring it back and sell it to them. Now, suppose somebody's allowed to have 2.5 grams of fentanyl on their person. They're running the drug and selling it to people in downtown East Side or wherever, Nanaimo, Victoria, doesn't matter, it's all bad. Courtney's getting bad. Prince George, bad. Everywhere it's getting bad. This is a huge problem. More people dying of this than anything else. This drug overdose thing is killing people. So somebody who's running drugs has 2.5 grams of fentanyl on their person. They get they go before a judge. The judge says, are you trafficking this 2.5 grams of fentanyl? Now, that's 1,250 hits, right? That's an awful lot of drugs to be standing on the corner with. Okay, so he just says, oh, Your Honor, I'm sorry, but this was just for my own personal use. Okay, out the door, away you go, back up in the street, start selling it more. So, you know, all in all, what are they trying to do? Now, we know that fentanyl is coming from the Mexican cartel. It's coming up into the United States. Last year, in the United States, over 70,000 people died of fentanyl drug overdose, that synthetic opioid drug overdose. And that is more people than died in Afghanistan, Vietnam, and Iraq altogether combined. Now, so China is behind this drug fentanyl influx because they are supplying the cartels with the precursors, which means the chemicals to make fentanyl. So it's all coming out of China and it's coming through China. And, you know, China is I'm sure, sitting back and laughing and thinking, you know, let's get all these Americans and Canadians stoned out of their minds and kill them. And we're killing more than we killed in the three biggest wars that we've had in the last 20 years, you know?
Yeah. Murray, that's a grim statistic, but it's people need to know so that we can correct it. And one way to correct it is to get rid of. Of course, we have to get out of government the people that are making these very ridiculous policies. So legislation. And the other thing is, of course, on a personal level with the individuals out there, like we believe there's hope for every individual, and there's God offers opportunity for escape. You're an example of that. And sure. And so what would you put out right now? Just I want to close on a hopeful note here.
I would like to say a poem that I wrote in 1977, and it kind of represents my life coming out, and it's you know, paraphrased a little bit and stuff, but I know the poem off by heart, and I'd like to share it with your viewer.
Yes, please do that. We need to give people some hope.
Okay. Walking down life's highway beneath a heavy load, the burden on your back is more than you can hold. The many miles have wearied you, and there's dust upon your toes. Your eyes are black from darkness, and you've worn out all your clothes. Your mind is in confusion, and your heart is cold as steel. Love is just a memory, but nothing you can feel. Look up, you wandering traveler, to the hill called Calvary. The Savior there was crucified for folks like you and me. So don't you worry about Jesus. He's saved men like you before. Just hearken to his gentle voice and open up the door. Confess his name before men and he'll remember you. For every word that Jesus spoke is powerful and true. Then before you go another mile, compel the Son of Man to walk along beside you and take you by the hand onto a better highway. Though narrow it may be, the difference in God's highway is it leads to victory. Whatever is your burden, you can lay at Jesus' feet. You can be a son of God and never know defeat. I know that this is true, my friend, for not very long ago, I was walking down life's highway with no place I could go.
Well, Murray, that is beautiful and very inspiring, and we hope that those very words reach the ears that need to hear it. We do want victory and release of from bondage for every drug addict in British Columbia and across Canada.
Amen.
Thank you for sharing this with us, and God bless you as you and your wife continue your work there with your children, your grandchildren, your goats, your chickens, and all the things that you look after, and you're serving as a pastor and teacher. God bless you in your work, and we'll look forward to speaking to you again. Thank you for bringing us some hope today.
Good night. Thank you, Ron.
Thanks a lot.
Bless you.